This is the Drive and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
You haven't even started yet!
To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
David West, man, he really wants to win a ring.
He really does.
Kevin Rayfuse.
If Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double for the season and his team makes the playoffs, I don't know how it can be anyone other than him.
And Justin Kuzak.
I know. I just feel like they got this guy and he's just been injured since. Like, I'm curious to see how they work him into lineups. Like, they've gotten so used to not having him. Like, how do they end up using him?
The Drive and Dish Podcast.
We start right now.
You know, just when you think 2016 can't just kick you in the nuts anymore, it just perpetually finds a way. And that happened once again this week as the basketball community, we've lost an absolute legend in Mr. Craig Sager.
And I gotta say, I was watching a video of Kevin Garnett just kind of roasting him about his outfit, saying he's like, I get it, it's a nice outfit, but when you get home, throw it in the fire pit. Those shoes, too. And no one can see the socks, but make sure the socks end up in there, too.
Just burn it. Burn the whole thing.
But honestly, like those suits are legendary for sure.
So it happened on Thursday, and it happened during the day on Thursday. And the TNT games were on that night.
Right.
And it was incredible, I thought, from a broadcasting perspective, how quickly
everyone reacted.
Well, not everyone reacted, but how well TNT and how quickly they were able to put together everything, as well as like the Craig Sager shirts that everyone was wearing. And I know a lot of people were looking for those shirts, and I went to go buy one myself, and they are sold out on every single team store, which kind of speaks to the
impact that he had.
Yeah, magnitude of his loss.
You could only hope to be that important or that respected of a reporter in the NBA, right?
And nobody has anything bad to say. Like, what else is there? Like, nobody has anything bad to say. You didn't hear any play when players talk about him, when coaches talk about him, when his fellow colleagues talk about him. You know, it's always positive. And plus, the inspiration he provided for so many people over these last 3 years. You know, this was a tough fight against leukemia, and Craig was out there every day, you know, not really ever getting down on himself, always upbeat and always positive and always the same guy. And I just think there's a lot to be said about that.
I wonder if anybody in the future will be as respected as him. I don't think any reporter will ever get to that level.
Well, there was one of his colleagues was talking about one of the things that they really enjoyed about working with Craig Sager was that there were times that they were working with him that themselves or the other reporters didn't want to ask specific questions because they were tough questions.
Kind of worried about the reaction.
Yeah, the team wasn't going to take it well.
They get Westbrooked.
One thing they always enjoyed about working with Craig Sager was that they knew that he would ask those hard questions, and at the end of the night that they would still have the sound from it. That's like one underreported, for lack of a better word, because we're starting this podcast early. It's one aspect of his job that I don't think a lot of us really thought about.
And one of the things, me and Kevin joined Joe Mullinax on the Grizzly Bear Blues that night. I was saying, like, I remember watching him when I was younger and just being like, I want to do that. I want to talk to the players after the game and stuff like that, which then turned into, oh, then you should start working on getting into radio and stuff like that. And that's where I am now. So he's a big part of that.
Yeah, he's one of your idols. So, I mean, all three of us are in media. So definitely, you know, one of those guys you look up to. Plus, there's just so many classic interviews, too, between, you know, all the ones with Popovich, the Kevin Garnett bar fight interview, just all the time Shaq would rip on him and tell him to throw his suits away. And
before we get past Shaq, I saw some just random guys that tweet a lot about the NBA that I follow talking about how they were pissed off, and I'm kind of with them on this. They were talking about how Whiteside could body Shaq. They were talking about like how Shaq wouldn't be able to handle Whiteside in today's NBA.
I mean, no.
I just hate those debates like that. Like, oh, this player from that era couldn't do it with it. Like, you don't know.
How do you know? The game is different. Like, why is it so?
Maybe they could. Maybe they couldn't. But maybe they'd be equals. Who
but here's,
knows?
Here's my question. Why is it so they're always like, oh, back in the old day, those guys could beat anybody today. But then when we talk about Westbrook's triple-doubles, it's like, Westbrook's triple-doubles are way more amazing than the triple-doubles that happened back then.
Wow.
I get it because pace of game and all that, but it's still like,
well, the rules are different in every era. Like, you know,
the rules are definitely like the hand checking now and things
like
that.
Like,
players
that matters.
Could not shoot three-pointers.
Like they did?
Like they did. Like back in the day, like Steph Curry just wouldn't be a thing.
And I was going to say, a lot of, although in the past week there's been a lot of fights in the NBA, so that's kind of like the old days.
there has been. There's been some really
Porzingis,
testy games,
Chris.
Man.
Yeah, they were going at it for a while there. Chris Draymond just... Green and Davis.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, they got into it a little bit, but I think that was more Draymond Green just kind of being all over the place and Davis getting frustrated, which I get.
It seems like something that happens a lot. Know what else is something that happens a lot? We record episodes of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast, which you're listening to right now. My name is Kevin Rafuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
The ball does not lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Cousart.
24 threes, and I can't get one attempt. Laughing face emoji twice. 9 straight, and love the crowd energy tonight. Hashtag Rockets 50.
John Wall.
Rockets.
Clint Capella.
I just thought maybe it was John Wall. He's been bitching a lot lately.
Well, and they really have the right. Yeah, he has a right to, though. They're starting to play a little better. But yeah, the Rockets made 24 three-pointers. That's an NBA record. And their number of attempts was just outrageous, too. I mean, Keith Nassi asked us this on Twitter. I mean, what do you guys think about it? Because they were just letting it fly.
Mike D'Antoni.
You got to let it happen, man. You just got to accept it. They got the longest win streak in the NBA right now with 9, for sure.
They won 9 straight. They're definitely sitting right there in the mix. The Western Conference, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, so I don't really want to get into the standings yet. But
well, then why are you doing it?
Well, because I'm just saying the Western Conference is starting to solidify, giving the people a little tease.
So each week on the show, we like to give you guys a shout-out for giving us a shout-out, because there is nothing more important or beneficial that you can do for us for the show other than leaving an iTunes review. It really helps us get noticed by other people that are looking for podcasts. And this week we have one from
America. It is a 5-star review by Acceptance Lover. The title of the review is fantastic. And Acceptance Lover says, I've been searching for a sports podcast for some time and stumbled across this one. If you love basketball and honest podcasts, then this is the perfect one. I listen to this every morning while getting ready for work and sometimes even on the drive to work. Great job, guys.
So this is another one of these reviews we've gotten where they say they listen to us every morning. The only way that is possible is if they listen to like 15 minutes.
Well, yeah, it's fine. Split it up. Make it like a week-long
thing.
Well,
maybe, yeah, if your drive's not that long.
Right, but do you think they're fibbing? And then they listen every morning, or do you think that they legitimately do listen every morning? Because we, for the most part, put out one or two episodes a week.
Well, you know what would suck, too, is if they exited out of their like podcast listening device and then just had to listen to the same 15 minutes every day.
It wouldn't do that.
It doesn't? Because mine did that the other day. It bothered me.
Oh, yeah, no.
I was listening, and then I was like, oh, I'll come back to this tomorrow at the gym. And then I went back, and it was like, it started from the beginning, and I was like, oh,
so
I don't
did you give up?
Yeah. I went to listening to music on Spotify.
Fair.
Like, all right, well, can't fight that.
Really persevere in there, man.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
Not good. It's a contract year, but Blake Griffin will undergo minor surgery on his right knee. Griffin has been experiencing knee and calf soreness this season. He's expected to miss until sometime in mid-January. Right now, this season, Griffin is averaging 21 points, 9 rebounds, and 4.6 assists per game. And bad news for the Blazers, who desperately need some rim protection. They will likely lose Festus Ezeli all season following knee surgery. He signed a 2-year, $15 million contract with the Blazers during the offseason. In the Sacramento Kings in the news again. They are reviewing an incident in which DeMarcus Cousins confronted a reporter about an unfavorable article that was written regarding the New York nightclub incident. To the Kings' credit, they say that they want open transparency on this issue. Cavs' Chris Anderson is out for the remainder of the season for a torn ACL he suffered during practice. Not sure why, but that line reminds me of Allen Iverson. I guess there is something to be said for skipping practice. And it's official. The Spurs have retired Tim Duncan's number 21 jersey on Sunday in their blowout win over the Pelicans. For Duncan's career, he averaged 19 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 assists per game. But most impressive, perhaps, is that while he was with the Spurs, they won 5 championships and never once missed the playoffs. And surging right now in the East are the Washington Wizards, who came up with a quality win over the Clippers on Sunday on the back of Bradley Beal's 41-point performance. Keith had an impact on the game as well, scoring 23 with a few key defensive plays against Blake Griffin. The Wiz have now won 5 of their last 6 contests and sit just behind the Hawks. They're 12-14 on the season. And it looks like Nerlens Noel is an odd man out in Philly. He's almost fallen completely out of the rotation and didn't even play in the Sixers' win over the Nets on Sunday. The DNP was following a meeting Noel had with Brett Brown about playing time. Expect a trade soon. For their 7th win of the season on Sunday, Joel Embiid led the team in scoring with 33 points on 12 of 17 shooting. For the Nets, Brooke Lopez had 22-9. Make sure that you follow the Drive and Dish on Instagram. Just search Drive and Dish Podcast.
Something.
Wanted to take a second to talk to you guys about SeatGeek. It is the ticket buying app for your phone. It is free. You got to get this thing, man. It will tell you the best deals you can get at each and every seat in the stadium. So it'll tell you if some spots are overpriced and some spots are underpriced, which obviously you're going to go with the underpriced ones unless you want to spend extra money, then, you know, you do you. The other thing that's cool is they're partnering with us yet again. What you can do is when you download this app, it's in your app store again, by the way. Once you get in there, go to the settings tab and put in the promo code DISH. And what will happen is when you buy your first pair of tickets, they are going to send you $20. So you're going to save yourself some extra cash and show SeatGeek that you support the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. I'm actually using it to find tickets to go to the Tax Slayer Bowl. You know, we're here in Jacksonville. So it's pretty cool, super easy to understand, and you can do it right from the convenience of your phone. Again, that's the SeatGeek app. Use the promo code DISH.
And we are joined by a special guest on the line right now. You have heard him on this podcast multiple times. Definitely a friend of the show. Overall, great guy. Real GM's own Keith Smith. Make sure you're following Keith at Keith Smith NBA. And Keith, what Keith is great at is, you know, breaking down the numbers. He's, you know, really good at looking at the cap and all sorts of other, you know, more technical things that are NBA related. And that's why especially we've called in his expertise today, because Keith, let me tell you, this new CBA, it's on the verge of passing, you know, still working out a few of the technicalities, but it looks like it's good. A lot of this deal has been leaked, and we were going to try to do this ourselves, but Keith, let me tell you, we are bringing the big guns for this one, because there are so many little intricacies in this, and that is why we are bringing you on today.
Well, happy to be here, happy to help. Hopefully I can clear things up for you and stay in a better place.
Keith, I know over the summer and the course of the season that you keep a really amazing Google document of all the teams with their hard cap and their salary floor and the room exceptions and yada, yada, yada. And you really work night and day on that. What does this new CBA do to your cap sheet that you work so hard? Is the whole thing just done?
No, it's not done. The good thing is the salaries for the players are what they are. It's really just the minutiae around it, so the various exceptions amounts and what the cap is. The fortunate thing is, for me, is in my database, the Google doc that's out there for everybody, and if you're interested, there's a tweet pinned to the top of my Twitter bio there, so you can take a look. But what I have done is I've built it so it's relatively easy for me to update. I just have to go in, plug in some numbers, and it'll update for all 30 teams fairly quickly. It's when you get into the individual team player salary, that's what ends up taking me the most time on it. So it's a labor of love for sure, but something that I very much enjoy.
We had been talking about before the agreement, but the players' salaries are obviously going to keep going up. Do you know, like, how much they're going to be going up by each year, or is it going to be pretty big?
Yeah, so that's a great place to start with the new CBA. So what is locked in is if I signed for, let's say, $10 million this past summer, my contract's still going to be $10 million. That's not going to change. Whatever's locked in, with one minor exception, rookies who are on rookie-scale contracts, they are going to see a bump up in salary despite being currently under contract. So, for example, Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown, those guys that were drafted last year, they're going to see their actual salary bump up by a decent amount as the rookie scale is climbing to stay in line with the explosion in salaries around the league as the cap has gone up. But the good thing is, for those of us who are cap heads, is their cap number is going to stay the same. And that's actually a benefit to the teams as well. They're not going to have to then carve out additional cap space to afford these players as their salary bumps up. Now, anybody new who comes in, who's going to come in this year's the 2017 draft, rookie scale contracts are going to go up somewhere between 45% and 50%. versus where they sit today. So those are at a fixed amount, and they're going to bump way up. All the exceptions, so the mid-level exception, the biannual exception, the minimum salary exception for veteran players that are playing on the minimum, those are all going to go up 45 to 50% as well. And in the future, they're going to be tied to the salary cap. So if we see another big cap jump in a few years, those exception amounts will rise accordingly, so they're not really left behind to be almost an undesirable number.
Can you clarify a little bit on that? Because what I was reading is, as far as it, when you're looking at rookie scale contracts, or if you're looking at that minimum contracts, is to your point, those are going to go up at least 40%. So you have a team like, for example, the Suns, who six of their players are on those rookie scale deals, and it equivalated out to about $8 million more in salary this coming year, which makes a big difference. But did that site have that wrong? So what you're saying is this only counts for players that are just signing those. It's not going to be retroactive on players that have already signed those agreements?
No, it will be retroactive, but for the players that are currently in the league, so in your son's example, Marquise Chriss, Dragan Bender, Devin Booker, they will see the increase, but their cap number will not change. Their cap number will stay the same. So actual what they get paid is going to go up. But cap hit, which is what most of us as fans care about, right, because we're not paying their salaries.
Right.
I don't care how much they actually pay. We care about the cap hit. The cap hit is going to stay at what it is today. It will not go up.
One more question, because I know that Kevin really wants to jump in here. The impacts that this has on 10-day contracts, for one, do 10-day contracts, as well as D-League contracts, really, for that matter, go up? And my second question with that was, do 10-day contracts count towards a team's salary?
So 10-day contracts do count towards a team's salary. 10-day contracts are always signed using the minimum exception. So even if you're over the salary cap, as long as you're not pushing up against the hard cap or the luxury tax apron, you can always bring a player in on a 10-day contract. And they get paid one of three values, either if they're a rookie, if they have 1 year experience, or if they have two or more years experience. And those, they get paid prorated 10-day amount for that period of time that they come in based off of their years of experience in the league. Those will go up because the minimum scale is going to raise, like I said, 45 to 50%. There's various reports out there. I don't think we've seen enough of the actual number, but that's close enough for government work, right? 45 to 50%. So those will go up, and they do count against the salary cap.
Well, Keith, I know this season was the first season where the cap really boomed, and then obviously the big story was the Warriors then having the space to go out and get Kevin Durant while still having Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Iggy and Steph Curry and all these other guys. And you know, I think a lot of teams were worried about, as the cap just rapidly goes up, the possibility of these super teams continuing to form and kind of, you know, taken away from some of the parity that's been across the league, I guess, in this new CBA, because with the cap going to be continually going up as the NBA gets bigger and bigger, you know, does this CBA have anything to kind of, you know, hamper the ability of teams to create these super teams, or is it going to continue to be a free-for-all a bit as this cap goes up?
It doesn't have anything that makes it so that can't happen, but what this new agreement does is makes it easier and more lucrative for teams to keep their own free agents. So in the old world, you could always pay more, or as a player, make more if you re-signed with your current team because the raises were more and they could offer you an extra year. What they've introduced in this new CBA is called the designated player exception. And what that means is, for a superstar, let's use Kevin Durant as the example, you will see them be able to offer him a six-year deal, which is different. That's one year longer than previous. 8% raises, which is up from 7.5%, as well as different conditions to be able to sign those types of players. So the player has to have been drafted by that team or traded to that team. So you can't do this with someone else's free agent that you're trying to bring in. And the guy has to have made one of the three All-NBA teams and the MVP or the Defensive Player of the Year in the previous season, or hit any of those in two of the previous 3 years. So what it's going to do in this case is Oklahoma City would be able to keep Kevin Durant if we were, you know, rewinding this to last summer, and they would have been able to offer him an additional year plus that much more of a raise on top of things. So they're trying to make it easier to keep guys around without completely limiting the ability for players to move, because a player can always choose to take less money and go somewhere else if he likes the situation better. But they're just trying to make it that much more lucrative for teams to retain their own guys.
Was that rule made with the thought of smaller market teams? That way, you know, like Carl Anthony Towns and Wiggins could possibly be staying and won't leave to a bigger market and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely something that's in there. I know for certain that the smaller market ownership groups have pushed for ways to retain their players a little bit better. There has been some talk that some were in favor of doing a franchise tag, almost like how the NFL works. Mm-hmm. But that was something that the Players Association wanted no part of because it just limits movement of players. So what both sides have always agreed to do is we don't want to make it impossible for guys to move because then it's not free agency anymore. But we want to make it better for the incumbent team to retain their guy.
As far as you were talking a bit about offering extensions, can you kind of delve a little bit deeper into the extensions that teams are now able to offer, but specifically why a player such as John Wall isn't qualified?
Yeah, so John Wall's not qualified because he hasn't met that criteria. Yeah, he didn't make All-NBA, MVP, or Defensive Player of the Year last year. And, you know, what remains to be seen what happens this season, obviously. And then he has not made All-NBA, then the MVP, or the Defensive Player of the Year two of the previous 3 years. So in order to qualify for this bigger jump, they have to meet those criteria. So basically, it's really designed around superstar players.
Okay.
That it's going to give the team the advantage to keep the superstar players over other teams. It's also, they always build into the CBA a way to kind of protect teams from themselves so that they're not throwing a ton of money at a guy who had, you know, one good season. They want to make sure that they're doing the right thing and really keeps that allows the money to be more balanced around the league as well as, like, it's protecting teams from themselves and burying themselves in an unenviable cap position.
So this wouldn't impact somebody like Otto Porter, for example?
Correct. No. Now, Otto Porter could become eligible for the what's commonly referred to as the Rose Rule exception, which is similar to this rule. It's just slightly tweaked for players coming off rookie scale contracts. But Porter would have to really raise his game up quite a bit to even qualify for that, which is probably not going to happen despite him having a really good season. He'll be eligible for the more traditional type extension.
So another thing I kind of heard bouncing around with this rule is I think some people were calling it the Kevin Love rule, which I guess I found funny at the time. So teams are going to be able to sign two guys to five-year contracts now. How does that work?
Correct. Two players will be able to be signed now. It used to only be one player could have the designated five-year total contract through the extension process. Now they'll be able to do two.
Okay, back to kind of what you and Tim were talking about. That means Curry can get paid by, like, a ton of money, right?
He can make well north of $200 million on his next contract if he stays with the Warriors. If he was to leave and sign elsewhere, I believe it's around $140 million or so.
Yeah, I mean, these contracts are just booming. There's no other way around it. I mean, $200 million, it's just crazy to think about how much that will have changed in, you know, 3 years relative to some of these superstar contracts. But Keith, I want to take it to a different note now as part of the CBA. You know, there are reports out there that the NBA is trying to shorten the preseason and they want to start the regular season a week earlier, you know, to kind of help space out the games, eliminate the number of back-to-backs. I guess, what type of effect do you think this is going to have in general? And, you know, how much of an issue is this? We've heard the players bring this up in the past. How important to this was the players trying to get that issue taken care of?
Yeah, it was important to both sides. Both the NBA, its teams, its owners, the coaches, everybody. Nobody likes the preseason. Everyone wants that to be shorter. And the only way to get less back-to-backs and 4 and 5 nights, those are the two things they want to limit as much as possible. The only way to do that is to lengthen the regular season. They're not going to reduce the amount of games. That's not going to happen. That would cost everyone money who's involved. So by doing this, by shortening the preseason, starting the season about a week to a week and a half earlier, it's going to just add that 4 days in that will reduce the number of back-to-backs and 4 or 5 nights, which, as I said, that's what everybody wants. It's all about the health of the players. And then the NBA is motivated by they want to have the most available players for every single game. The other night, right, everyone made a huge deal that when the Cavs rested LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love in Memphis, the NBA doesn't like that. It's not a good look. So they want to do things that can reduce the chances of that happening in the future. And this is just the first step along the way.
That was what I was just about to ask you. Was that the main point of doing this, is so that they don't have situations like that where, you know, I guess you could call it the pop effect or whatever you want to call it, where you have players sitting out when, like, that one fan posted a picture. He paid $400 to go to a game. And $800 to go to a game, and you know, the star players on the team were sitting, so I guess his person to look forward to was J.R. Smith.
Yeah, that's tough, you know, and I feel bad for people like that. And, you know, here in Orlando, we've seen it happen too. Last year, Kobe Bryant in his last season sat out the only game here in Orlando. And so the NBA doesn't like it. It's not a good look. The players themselves also want to play. You know, it's rare that a player says, yeah, I need a day off. I want a day off. It's usually the coaches. And by reducing all of these things, the coaches are able to balance things a little bit more. So hopefully that's going to help to clean this up. The one challenge is the NBA doesn't want to go too far into the fall because they don't want to compete with the NFL too much.
Right.
You know, the NFL is king in this country. We all know that. So they don't want to push too deep into the fall. So that's why it's only going to be about a week to week and a half earlier that we're going to see the season kick off.
Hey, fun fact. I've actually paid to see Kobe Bryant 3 times, and he has sat out every single one of those games.
Oh, man. That's a fun fact?
Yeah, that's an unfun fact, I would say.
I mean, it's just like, never got to see him. I tried.
Well, Keith, one of my last questions is, how long is this contract going to go through? Or, you know, when's the next time we're going to be having to watch these guys go back and forth? How long is this agreement for?
7-year deal, much like the previous agreement, with a mutual opt-out after 6 years. So really call it a 6-year deal, because it's very rare that both sides don't want to opt out, or either side. So it's going to run up to at least, what does that make it, 2022 or 2023, which is great for us as NBA fans to not have to worry about these things. This is a case where both the NBA and the Players Association, the players, the owners, everybody involved realizes they have things really good right now. It was a very smooth negotiation. There weren't a lot of real acrimonious points. There wasn't a lot of arguing, a lot of negotiating through the media. Most of what we heard was, this is done, and now we're on to the next issue, which is great to see. So we'll see that. One thing to be aware of, the deadline to get this done was pushed back to January 13th. That's a good time for all the players to see all the details of the CBA and to get ratification of it.
Well, and you said on to the next issue. I'm just kind of curious, what do you think the next issue is?
The next big one that's still out there is the draft eligibility rules.
Oh, man.
NBA wants to continue to push the minimum age up. So what happened in the course of the negotiation was the NBA asked for the minimum age to be 20 versus 18, as it is today. The Players Association asked for what's called a 0 or 2 rule, which means players could come right out of high school, but if they did not come right out of high school, they would have to go to college or elsewhere for a minimum of 2 seasons, which is somewhat similar to the Major League Baseball policy in the way their draft works. So both sides basically said, you know what, let's table this for now, and we will stick with the rule as it is, the current one-and-done rule, and we'll roll with that. That is something, though, that they don't have to wait 6 more years to negotiate that. They can always bring that back to the table and get back at it and see if there's something mutually beneficial that can be figured out. The NBA, though, they're really dug in. They do not want their coaches, scouts, and general managers in high school gyms all across the country watching these kids.
Right.
And they also don't want to go down the path of having rosters that are filled with guys who are, you know, days after the prom, they're an NBA player. It just seems it didn't work out well.
I mean, playing high school talent, then all of a sudden playing NBA talent, just I can't see that working out well.
Well, and it takes these, like, look at a guy like Tyson Chandler. He came straight out of high school, and, you know, the first 2 years when he was with Chicago, it didn't go that well. He needed those years to mature.
Yeah, so that's the NBA side of it. The union side is, if I'm 18 years old, I can go get a job anywhere else. You're going to tell me I can't play here. So there's always that piece. But I'll tell you guys, from what I've heard, the union fights for it, but they don't fight for it too hard, because every guy you bring in that's 18 years old and right out of high school is one less job for a player who's, say, 33 years old and trying to get that last year or two in of his contract. So they fight for it, but it doesn't seem like either side's dug in too hard, which is why I think they ultimately just said, let's keep it as is and just go with it the way it is today.
Well, Keith, you just mentioned older players right there, and I think we'd be remiss to not mention the banana boat rule on this. It looks like there's now the over 36 rule that changed to the over 38, which really impacts LeBron James, Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, unfortunately not Dwayne Wade. Can you kind of go into that, and if we can expect to see a lot of teams offering longer-term deals to older players simply because they can, or will teams not do it because they don't want to offer somebody that's 34 a 4-year contract?
Yeah, there's a couple things with this. The first big reason why I push from 36 to 38 is look who's in charge of the Players Association on the player side.
Right.
The guys mentioned, you know, the guys who are pushing up against this rule. So what the over 36 rule does is it essentially says you can't sign a player who's going to be over 36 years old to this super long contract. Again, kind of protect the teams from themselves. As players age better and can perform at a higher level later and later into their career, teams want to be able to have that flexibility, as well as the players want to be able to make that money later in their career. So it just makes sense to shift it to over 38. It used to be a player turned 32, 33, and their career was just about done. Now we're seeing these guys play at a super high level all the way up until, you know, 35, 36, 37. And who knows what's going to come with a guy like LeBron, how long he can play at the level he's at. So we'll see. It's going to definitely help out guys like Chris Paul, LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony that you mentioned get that next contract for a little bit longer than they could have under the previous agreement.
Well, you mentioned those guys, you know, the superstars of the league getting their last contracts, but, you know, one of the people, or one of the few dissenting voices really about this agreement we saw was Draymond Green. He went out on Twitter talking about how one day they'll get it perfect, but he's not a fan of the deal. And then later, when asked to clarify about it to reporters, he was talking about how he doesn't think it's fair necessarily to some of the younger players, some of the guys who, you know, are on the fringe of the league or maybe coming up from the D League. I guess, you know, does Draymond Green have a valid point, or do you think he's reaching a bit as this new agreement gets signed?
Yeah, I think Draymond Green's the kind of guy who's only happy when he has something to be unhappy about. And the challenge with him is, he has somewhat of a point, but those salaries went up as well. Now, what he's, I think, upset about is the more money you give to older players, the less likely you're going to have that money to give to the younger players. And he came in as a minimum contract guy, obviously vastly outperformed that, and then got himself the next big contract. That's still there. That option is still there for players. And now, instead of making the minimum salary about a little over $500,000 a year now, that's going to go up, you know, considerably up, you know, closer to $750,000 or so. So for Draymond Green to be that upset about it, I don't really see his point with it. Maybe he's seeing something that I don't see, but it seems like this was the pie got that much bigger, and everybody's piece of the pie got bigger throughout the process.
So one thing we've talked about extensively on the show is, really, the D League and options for players who are fringe NBA players or minor league players, there really isn't a large incentive for them to stay in the D League when they can go overseas and make much, much more money. Does this new CBA affect the D League at all? And if it does in a good way, could we see some of those fringe NBA players we were just talking about shooting their shot in the D League and staying here in the States instead of heading overseas?
It does. And this is one of my favorite parts of this whole new agreement, is the changes to the D League. So first of all, what the biggest change is that roster sizes on the NBA teams are going to increase. It looks like it's going to be 17. There's still a few scattered reports that it could be 18, but 17 seems to be what everyone's locking into. Now, what's going to happen is those last two roster spots are locked in for players that are going to be on what's called two-way contracts. Again, similar to the Major League Baseball model, a player makes one amount when he's down in the minors. Then when he's up with the big league clubs, he makes a different amount. That's going to be what we're going to see with the NBA, which is great because it's going to allow them to keep those guys around a little bit longer, bring them in, especially for second-round picks who don't get that guaranteed rookie scale money. They'll be able to entice those guys by saying, hey, we're going to sign you. We're going to use you on this two-way contract. You'll play down in the D League to get your experience up and get that game, those game minutes. But then we're going to have you with us for practices. That's another big change why the D League is moving more and more teams closer to their home franchise. We're seeing most of them are within driving distance now. Orlando's going to be the next one to do that. They just announced this week that they're moving the Erie. They're going to buy the Erie BayHawks.
Yeah.
Move them to Lakeland.
Yeah, we know. We know.
We're sad about it. They didn't move them to Jacksonville.
We're aware.
So what's going to happen, though, what's great about that, though, from an arrangement standpoint is a guy like Steven Zimmerman, let's use him as the example. Orlando would love to have him practice daily with the Magic when they're here in Orlando and then just drive over to Lakeland that night and play the game. But in Erie, that's not necessarily possible, right? It's just too far.
It'd be fine, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to see that definitely change, and we're going to see teams utilize the D-League more. And, Tim, you hit on it, the D-League salaries are going to go up, not by a huge amount. They're not going to compete with the overseas salaries too much, but it's going to be that much more money that it's going to be the players can say, yeah, you know, instead of playing there and then having to play in maybe the Philippines over the summer or down in South America or one of those leagues to make a full year's amount of money, all right, I can just stay here in the D-League, make a 4 years amount of money, and stay closer to the NBA and do that. The other thing is, whenever you're in the D-League, as long as you're not assigned there by an NBA team, you're an NBA free agent, and you can be signed by anybody, and we see those call-ups happen all the time. A lot of those overseas contracts, sometimes they get an NBA out in them, but a lot of times they're locked in for the year. Mm-hmm. So if a team comes calling and says, you know, hey, we want to bring you over, if you're locked in, you're stuck. You can't come back over the on an NBA roster. So the changes they're making there are really exciting. And the other big piece, it's not tied to the CBA, but we're going to see what the D-League is. Adam Silver has absolutely made it a goal to have 30 D-League franchises, one for each team, within the next, let's say, 3 to 4 years. He really wants to see that.
So speaking to your point, Keith, I work for an ABA team here in Jacksonville, and those guys, they play one season with their ABA team, and then the entire rest of the year, they're playing in like multiple different leagues all over the world. I mean, it's crazy to me the amount of basketball and different options that players have. So it seems like we're finally getting that something's happening in the D-League that's needed to happen in the D-League.
Yeah, with the D-League, you really want guys to feel like they're one step away from an NBA job. In today's world, for a lot of those guys, it feels like they're still maybe 4 or 5 steps away in a lot of ways. And, you know, it sounds kind of funny to say it, but a lot of these D-League guys, they only make $30,000 a year, which I know to some people is a lot of money, but in terms of professional sports, that's nothing. So when they can go overseas and make a couple hundred thousand, that becomes a point of, I might as well just go there and take it. So it's all about making the D-League a more viable and competitive option to evaluate talent for the big club in the NBA. And that's what, you know, we're progressing towards it. It's been slow but sure, but we're almost there.
I was going to say, I have a few buddies in the minor leagues for baseball, and yeah, they don't make anything. Everything's just at his parents' house. He's not able to, like, go home.
Some of them will Uber drive during the off season.
Yeah, it's insane.
That speaks to the amount of money they're making.
Right. But so, Keith, one last question I have for sure, because I don't know why, but suddenly our podcast has become so Grizzlies-oriented. We've talked so much Grizzlies the past few episodes. But, you know, one of the questions that comes up all the time, at least on the Grizzlies Reddit and a bunch of fans asking the question, you know, Chandler Parsons has only really been able to play like 6 games this year, and the knees are a concern, and I think he's on a 96 million dollar contract, so they keep asking, is the contract going to be worth it when it's all said and done? With the money going up, if he kind of never really is able to play a full NBA season, will the money going up kind of justify his contract, like we've said that will happen with some other players, or is this one still look like it could potentially be bad?
Yeah, that's tough. I don't know that it's gone up enough to justify over $24, $25 million in some of those years for a guy who can only play half a season. I don't think it's gone up quite that much. I think, you know, you have a guy who's making $4 or $5 million and he misses half a year. All right, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's the same situation with, like, a Bradley Beal in Memphis. They handed him in Washington, rather. See, now you got me thinking Grizzlies. They handed him that max contract, and is he ever going to play a full season, or did he only get a cap out at around 60 games or so? So that's always the tricky part. I don't know that it'll ever come up. But it leads me to a point that I definitely wanted to work in here, so it's a great segue, is a lot of people have asked, is there going to be an amnesty clause in this round of the CBA, in this new CBA? And the answer is 100% no. Only, from what my sources have told me, only two teams asked for an amnesty clause and pushed for it at all. The other 28 teams had no willingness or inclination to let teams who made questionable decisions this past summer, when the cap spiked, off the hook for those decisions. So sounds like absolutely not. No amnesty clause coming in this contract. So guys like Chandler Parsons, if they're not worth that contract, Memphis is just going to have to ride it out for the remainder.
Are you allowed to say which two teams asked for that clause?
I'd prefer not
to. Okay. just making sure.
Legit, I want to know. Real quick, I'm pretty much done with the CBA talk, but the Orlando Magic, are they going to trade Hezonja?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. Rob Hennigan's in a really tricky position. He really pushed his chips to the middle of the table and went all in to make the playoffs this year. And it hasn't worked out the way they had hoped for so far. So the challenge is, from an ownership standpoint, is are they going to give him the green light to go deeper in by trading away some of those younger assets and looking for veteran players that can help push them towards the playoffs? Or is ownership going to say, you know what, let's ride this out? Because the challenge for Rob Hennigan is, he trades those younger guys and they don't make the playoffs, he's probably going to lose his job. And then the Magic are going to be stuck rebuilding with a bunch of older players and no real young talent on the roster. If they keep the younger guys and don't make the playoffs, Rob Hennigan probably, again, loses his job, and he's not going to be here to see the rebuild play out with whatever they can get. So the Magic are really stuck in a tricky position. They're trying really, really hard to find a scorer. And teams have asked about Hezonja. There's some teams who still like him. Some teams want to use him off the bench. They think he can blossom in their system and under their team. So we'll see if that happens, or if it's more likely that they move, say, Nikola Vucevic somewhere to bring in that score instead. But it's a tough situation for Rob Hennigan and the Magic themselves to be in here in Orlando.
I mean, that was the one thing about the Magic that we talked about over the summer was, you know, Vooch, depending on how the season went, was really going to be probably their greatest trade chip moving towards the trade deadline.
Yeah, he absolutely is. He's on a really good contract, considering where everything has gone cap-wise for an offensive center. The problem is most teams look at their center now as a defensive player first, and if the guy's a big that can't really defend and protect the rim, that's tricky. Now, I will say Vucevic has adopted Frank Vogel's teachings of verticality and staying solid positional defense, and he's been much, much better on that end of the floor this year, but it remains to be seen, is that true improvement by him, or is that a system type of thing? And can they make that work long term? He's coming off the bench now. He's openly not happy about it. He doesn't love it, and he won't say too much as long as the team wins enough while he's coming off the bench. But if that situation really goes south, I think you're going to see that probably be the move, the Magic.
Yeah, they're definitely going to be a team to keep an eye on at the trade deadline. And Keith, we'll have to have you back on around then. But we appreciate you coming on today. Again, this has been Keith Smith joining us here on the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Friend of the show, make sure you follow him on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA. You can check out his work at Real GM. Also, he's a contributor at Celtics blog, 16 Wins the Ring. So make sure you check them out as well. And Keith, you know, we always let our guests get out of here on a lighter note. So I have to ask the question, because I went and saw it last night and I'm still really excited about it. Are you a Star Wars guy? If so, have you seen Rogue One yet?
Yes and yes. I grew up with Star Wars. I had all the toys. I was a huge Star Wars fan as a kid. Loved the second round of movies when they came out. So far, I'm loving what they've done with these two newer options. I thought Rogue One was really well done. I liked that it filled in some of those gaps. So you always kind of wonder how, you know, and I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but how did they get to where they got to for the original trilogy of movies? So a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was just like, I'm the same boat as you. I've been a Star Wars fan for so long, and, you know, you worry about, whenever you hear spinoffs, you know it's in the same universe, but you worry about it being kind of pushed to the side a little bit. And there were so many little references to, I'm not going to spoil anything. It just came out, but I was so satisfied as a Star Wars fan walking out of that movie last night.
Yeah, I always say it sounds like they keep calling it a standalone film, and to me it just feels like it fits right in with the other seven almost seamlessly.
You know, it really sets things up for A New Hope. But again, Keith Smith, great stuff. Really appreciate you as always. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at KeithSmithNBA, and Keith, you'll be back on soon.
Thanks, guys. Happy to always come on and talk ball with you. And happy holidays.
Happy holidays, Keith. So you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. Again, that is a very complicated issue. Literally, something that Keith is much more versed in than we are.
Well, I was going to say, literally, you know, like when someone tells you a joke and it just goes so far over your head? That's what I felt by reading the details of this.
Well, that there was just so much.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like all over my head.
When you network, you make friends who are smart and can break down these things and be experts, and that's why they come on the show.
Well, because originally we were going to do it ourselves, and I was like,
just like, there's no way we're going to do it justice.
We know our limits.
There's no way we're going to be able to do this.
Not what we do for a living.
But so Tim Tompkins all week long has been talking about this game that he wants to play on the podcast today, which is a little terrifying in itself, and he's smirking right now.
Because
so
he wouldn't
I'm
let us prep.
Worried.
That's the whole thing. Is like we have no idea what's
right.
coming.
Like this is going to be a complete curveball headed our way. So I guess with no further ado, Tim Tompkins, what are you throwing at Justin and I today?
Well, first off, I stopped by the store and I picked up a bag of peanut M&Ms.
Great, probably the best flavor.
This is not
M&Ms
a paid
too.
Endorsement.
It is not a paid
if
endorsement.
If M&Ms wants to endorse us, though, that'd be awesome.
It is not an ad, but I picked this up, and this right here, this bag of peanut M&Ms.
Okay. Yeah.
Goes to the winner of the game.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Wow.
I actually wanted to get Skittles, but they didn't have Skittles. Oh. Anyway, so there's five teams I'm going to ask you about.
Okay.
Don't get on the computers, guys. I'm going to ask you who the highest scoring player is on their team.
Okay.
And the person that gets the most correct gets the bag of peanut.
We better not strike out, go over five.
We're going to go over five.
Nobody's going to ever listen to us again.
Legit, they're going to realize how little we know about that.
We're just going to have to bury this segment and just never hear it again.
Remember, peanut M&Ms are on the line, gentlemen.
All right.
I'm already drawing a blank.
All right. All right, we'll start this off. The Minnesota Timberwolves.
Is it like we can just guess, or is it you're going to give it to one of us?
Guess.
Kevin, I'll let you go first.
Towns.
I was going to guess Wiggins.
Wiggins it is.
Yeah.
Wiggins at 22 points, Cat at 21.
Oh, man, that was close too. Yeah.
Man.
I just, because Wiggins has had so many like really big games.
I feel like the narratives
headlines.
Though are that Wiggins has been down this year. So I was a little like, you know,
they were up
Towns
for a while.
They've
slowed
them.
Down for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, I get that.
Next up, the Atlanta Hawks. Hold on. Justin goes first this time.
That one's a tough one. Because I'm trying to think of like.
Well,
who's
sure.
It?
I mean, I didn't pick.
I know.
Pick easy ones.
All right, I'm going.
It's not like I went with the Trailblazers.
I feel like Schroeder doesn't. I'm going to go Schroeder.
Okay.
I feel like he doesn't score that much, but that's what I'm going with.
All right, Kevy.
I'm going Paul Millsap.
Kevin got it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Paul Millsap at 16.9. Schroeder at 16.8.
Okay, oh, so wow. I wasn't that off.
I didn't think it was that close. Wow.
Okay, I wasn't that off then.
The Orlando Magic.
Evan Fournier.
Gordon.
Is Evan Fournier at 17.5?
Are we allowed to guess the same player? Because like I wanted to guess Fournier, but I figured since he guessed, I couldn't.
Yeah, you can. Okay. And then Ibaka at 14.9. So this one will go to Kevin.
I wasn't even close. Damn.
You're going first. Ibaka, so it's good. No, you have the balls in your court right now. Yeah. It was my turn to go first. Now it's your turn to go first.
We tied 1-1.
2-1.
We
got Fournier.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And there are five. So that way
all right, so Justin's got to get this one to stay alive.
The pressure.
The Los Angeles Lakers.
Clarkson.
Lou Williams.
Oh, shit, I didn't even... I should have known that.
Lou Williams I should have at known 19.1. I should have D'Angelo known that. Russell at 15.
All right, what's the fifth one? We just got to do this anyway.
Oh, yeah, we sure are. This is going to you, though, Kevin. The Denver Nuggets.
I know what my guess is going to be.
Gallinari.
Now I want to change mine because you didn't pick the guy I thought you were going to pick. I either want to say Jokic or Chandler. I'm going to go Chandler.
That's right.
Yeah!
Wilson Chandler at 17.2, Gallinari at 16.7.
Wilson Chandler's been having a nice season.
Yeah, no, Wilson Chandler's been great this year.
Yeah.
I thought Jamal Murray might be creeping up a little bit later because he's been playing a lot better recently.
I don't think we've used this saying in a really long time, but low-key, and Tim, I know you hate that, low-key, the Nuggets are like my second favorite team to watch.
Yeah, no,
I really like the Nuggets.
They are a really fun team. So just to recap the game, Kevin won, where he got the Hawks right with Paul Millsap. He got the Magic right with Evan Fournier, and he got the Lakers right with Lou Williams. Justin, you got two correct with the Timberwolves, Andrew Wiggins, and the Nuggets with Wilson Chandler.
All right, we didn't embarrass ourselves. I'm really glad about that.
Well, neither one of you had a guess. There was not a team in which neither one of you guessed the right person.
So we all got at least one.
This is fun. We're gonna have to do this again. I'm gonna bring some. What candy do you two like? I feel like we should do this like every other week or something.
Starburst.
Oh, see, I was going to say Skittles are legit. Well, I was really disappointed when you didn't have Skittles.
I wanted to get Skittles.
All right, we'll do Skittles. I'll get some Skittles. We'll do a different stat next week.
The winner has to come up with the game. How about that? That's right, a new rule. The winner has to come up with the game.
All right, I got it. You two are up. We'll have some fun.
So over the summer, what we did was a really cool thing where we were introducing you guys to new podcasts that you may not have heard. And one of the ones that I know Tim is a big fan of, and I've just started recently listening to as well, they're pretty awesome, and I know Tim wanted to give a little bit of a shout-out to those guys.
I listen, I care. I'm
sorry.
Do you listen to the Fast Break
Breakfast? Yeah. I listen. I mean, it's like one week I might listen to one podcast and then not listen to another one, and then the next week I'll flip-flop it. Like, I have certain consistent ones, but you know, there's a lot out there, and I like to switch it up.
Everybody has their own preference with podcasts.
Yeah.
The Fast Break Breakfast is hands down my favorite NBA podcast right now, especially after Zach Harper leaving.
I've been trying to think like of a good breakfast pitch to what you're going to say about them, but I can't really think of.
They should send breakfast to all their guests.
Scramble the eggs, Tim. I don't know. Scramble the eggs.
I don't really like eggs.
You don't like eggs?
No.
Eggs are my least favorite part of breakfast.
I have eggs
have grown
every morning.
I will only eat eggs if I have a meat and a toast or something to pair with it, like just eggs by themselves. I'd rather sit at home and just not eat.
Question: what do you guys put on your eggs?
Salsa.
What?
Well, that's interesting. That's an Arizona different. Thing.
I have eggs every morning. So you guys saying this is like a sin. I like
eggs. I put hot sauce on my eggs. Like, it's very enjoyable. But I just think there's bacon and sausage are better, and toast is better, and waffles and pancakes are better.
All of it.
Breakfast burritos. I mean, eggs are a part of that, but like, I'd rather have that. Like, chicken and waffles is better than eggs. Like, eggs are just the worst part of breakfast.
Hard-boiled egg with some ketchup, and you're good to go.
Ugh.
That's all you need.
Do you drown it in ketchup? I feel like you drown
it. I don't drown it because
ketchup.
I'm trying to be healthy. I used to, but I'm trying to be healthier because you don't want too much ketchup.
Do you still have seven bottles at your house?
No, we're down to three. I got to go to Costco and buy another six pack. I love ketchup, man. And it pains me that you guys don't like egg.
That's kind of how I felt after the ugly sweater, to give everybody an update on the ugly sweater party that I wasn't going to go to. I went, And I, okay, so I had four double.
Which is good. That's a good amount.
It's a good amount, but it's not.
Not enough to die.
It's not an obtrusious amount. Well, anyway, Justin and I were.
Did you just say obtrusious?
We got to keep this good words rolling.
Right. So Justin and I, well, Kevin was there too, but it was really me and you, Justin, that were hanging out. We were at this.
no, but there was a point where we were sitting above judging everybody walking up the stairs.
And there is a full ass drink sitting there. A full drink. It hadn't been touched. Ice was a little bit melted. Me and you, I was kind of toasty. I was kind of toasty at the time, and we waited a while, and nobody drank it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to drink this drink. I've got to ask Justin first to make sure that nobody if I drink this drink. So if it's drugged, Justin's going to make sure that nobody does anything to me. It's legit, right?
He literally asked me to watch and make sure he's good to go for the rest of the night. Like, I was like, I promise, I will do my best.
Why would you drink just a random drink that got left there?
I don't know, because I was toasty and it was full.
There's never
free.
An amount of drunk where I've been where I've thought that's a good idea.
Right, anyway.
Well,
it
happened. There's no going back.
I am fairly certain that somebody drugged this drink. Because
probably.
What they did was they drugged and they were waiting for a chick to pick it up and drink it, because legit, like an hour later, I was like blackout drunk, and that lasted a couple, about like an hour and a half, and then I came to and I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like a flip of a switch both times. The next day I was done. I just laid on my couch until like 3 o'clock. But I am fairly certain that when we went out to this stupid ugly sweater party that I got drugged.
Well, and what did we learn from this? Don't drink random drinks sitting around the bar.
I had fun. I had fun.
And then you guys are texting me, you're like, I feel great. And I'm like still on my couch. And
looking back, we got really off topic. We should probably talk about the fast break breakfast.
I want to take a moment to tell you about my very favorite NBA podcast. And part of what I like about this podcast in particular is I feel like it just vibes so well with what we do at the Drive and Dish. And that is the Fast Break Breakfast. It's a podcast for serious NBA fans that is incredibly not serious. If you watch League Pass every night but aren't listening to Fast Break Breakfast, you are missing out. Fast Break Breakfast is what happens when you get two musicians and a comic who are overeducated, underemployed, but share an obsession about the NBA, 90s movies, and conspiracy theories. Join the party, and soon you too will be talking about your steak and eggs best thing, or arguing who deserves the shameful International Stackhouse of Pancakes trophy. So make sure that you are listening and subscribe to Fast Break Breakfast, a podcast for serious NBA fans that is incredibly not serious.
You're listening to the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rapius, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. Make sure you like our Facebook page at Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. So taking a look at the Western Conference, you know, every week before we prep the show, you know, you take a look at the standings, the schedule, all sorts of little things like that. But when you look at the standings in the Western Conference right now and look at 1 through 8, and then you look at the first two teams out, 9 and 10. And I was comparing it to the Eastern Conference, where, you know, in the Eastern Conference, Cleveland and Toronto are significantly ahead of everybody else. And then it's pretty much a logjam between like 3 and 11, and even 12 maybe, where you could probably see any of these teams, if they get hot, getting into the playoffs. Where in the Western Conference, I'm looking at the 8 that are in right now, and it's probably not going to change at all.
Yeah, I realized this about a week ago. I was just looking at it. I'm like, pretty sure that's our 8 teams.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things...
Not in order, obviously.
Right. The order is going to jump around. It's all very close. But yeah, we were right about... Or I guess you guys. I was a little bit higher on the Trailblazers. You guys were right about the Trailblazers being a little bit lower than they have been in the past few years.
I was right about OKC.
Yeah, I think OKC's...
I think we consistently as a pod were pretty... Like, I think we all had OKC getting in, which I feel like, you know, you talked about it because you were on the round table. A lot of people didn't have.
Like, I was like, the only one in that round table discussion with people that are
that was
much,
low on them.
That are much smarter than me. And I kind of felt stupid. I said it anyway.
But it's one of those things.
Definitely. Like, I had them around where they are now. You know, I had them as 7 or 8. And I guess, you know, before we get too far into this, we should say, as of recording this, the West right now, the Warriors are at 1, they're 23-4. The Spurs are at 2, they're 21-5. The Clippers are at 3, they're 20-7. The Rockets are at 4, they're also 20-7. The Grizz are at 5, they're 18-10. Jazz are at 6, 17-10. The Thunder at 7, at 15-11. And the Trailblazers at 8, they're 13-15.
Well, the two out. So you have the Denver Nuggets and the Sacramento Kings. Do either of you guys see a scenario barring injury, so a scenario without an injury, that either the Nuggets or the Kings are able to make that push?
I mean, maybe a trade happens if, like, the John Wall
all
rumors...
All things being equal.
Okay, then I don't think the Nuggets do it. The Kings' dysfunction still kind of bothers me. They... Well, they're 4-6 in their last 10.
Yeah, Boogie's confronting reporters in the locker room.
I mean, the Nuggets, I mean, and the Kings, both on the road, are not that great. Losing, you know, the Kings being 5-10 on the road, like, it's
well,
just
the Nuggets
not...
are young, too. Like, you just reasonably assume the Nuggets aren't ready to take that leap yet, and they're still kind of figuring out some lineup, you know, with the presence of Fareed and Nurkic and Jokic. So I think there's still a lot of work to do there. I mean, honestly, if there's any team I can maybe argue for, it's the Pelicans. You know, Anthony Davis is there. Tyreke Evans is back this week.
Yeah,
Drew
Evans
Holiday's quietly been playing really well since coming back, and that's boosted them a bit. So you could maybe see them going on a run. Because, like, look, at the end of the day, I don't think Portland is good.
Well, Portland's the only team in the playoffs with a negative point differential at 110 scored, but 112 allowed. And you don't usually see a playoff team with a negative point differential,
and
period.
And Portland just doesn't really have a true center right now.
The Mavericks last year, I believe, had a negative point differential.
But yeah, I mean, in the East, there's a few right now. The Knicks have a negative point differential. The Hawks have a negative point differential. But the East is so much closer.
Well, the
Hawks
aren't in it, though.
No, the Hawks are in it as of today. They jumped into 8. They beat Toronto last night. They're tied with Chicago. So it's
a big
one of those
win
things.
For them.
Like,
yeah,
I mean, like
that.
Real quick, I don't want to get too off topic, but like with the East, you know, the Celtics and Knicks are 14-12. The Bucks are 13-12. The Hornets are 14-13. The Pistons are 14-14. The Hawks and Bulls are 13-13. The Pacers are 13-14. So, like, it's literally just like a game or two separating you from like 9-3.
Well, here's the other thing, too, at least in the West, looking at the net ratings, the Thunder and Trailblazers both are negative net ratings at the moment. So, I mean, maybe if another team gets hot in their net, and the, you know, things keep going the way that they are, and both those teams are losing at the moment, you know. So I think, I don't know. I don't think it changes much. But if it were to be anybody, I would maybe say the Trailblazers flip with somebody, but I don't even think that happens.
Yeah, I mean, the Portland, the only team that has a worse defensive rating than them right now in the entire league is Brooklyn. Like, there are a lot of issues there. Evan Turner hasn't fit nearly as well. Like, the Blazers have a lot of quality pieces that they could flip. You know, I don't want to get into Sixers big man trading, but, you know, you could see Nerlens Noel going there, for example, that I think would fit really well. It just the Trailblazers have so many. I mean, obviously, you know, Dame and CJ are their guys, but between Crabbe and Harkless, it gets a little repetitive. And then Evan Turner's a guy who needs the ball in his hands, you know, so Dame and CJ, and you want them doing it, not Evan Turner. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Trailblazers are the only one of these teams that I think has any kind of chance of slipping out, but even then, I just don't really have any faith in the teams below them to jump them.
No, I don't think it changed much. And I honestly, I'm curious to see what happens with the Grizzlies because they're finally getting healthy this weekend or this past weekend. So you know,
Mike Conley's nuts.
Mike Conley's breaking your back and coming in 2 weeks later.
So did they lose the game in which he came back?
Yeah, yes. They lost last.
But
fitting.
But we had guessed saying, you know, because him coming back, I think Ennis was coming back, Parsons coming back.
Well,
there was going to be that chemistry problem.
Yeah, Parsons didn't play Friday, but yeah, you know, we said on Grizzly Bear Blues Live and we guessed it earlier this week. There's all, you know, when you get guys that are healthy and you're on a roll, there's always that one weird, like, fluky adjustment loss. And I think that's kind of what the Grizz had last night against the Kings. And plus, you know, they're 7-1. Like, they're due for a loss.
But that was the thing with the Grizzlies is their defense obviously being, I think they were the best at the league, in the league then. They might still be the best in the league now.
Utah is right.
Utah
this second.
Them?
Yeah, Utah's
okay,
cooking
but,
right
but
now.
Even so, like, the Grizzlies needed scoring, and bringing back Connolly and Parsons when he does play is going to be, that's what they need now.
The
and that's just going to add to their, they were like 7-1 on Thursday, I guess 7-2
The Grizz are getting
December.
Healthy. Utah is getting healthy. Derek Favors is playing. Dante Exum is fully back in the mix. You know, they're still missing George Hill, but again, they're getting contributions from all of their guys. So they, you know, they're 8-2 in their last 10. You know, Houston is just
cooking.
Totally embraced the Mike D'Antoni just bomb away philosophy at this point, and it's working. You know, Harden, we've mentioned, is playing at an MVP level. They're getting quality contributions out of Beverly, out of Eric Gordon, out of Trevor Ariza, out of Sam Decker.
Hey, hold on really quick. Patrick Beverly as early favorite for Defensive Player of the Year.
I still think Kawhi.
You know what teams the B-ball breakdown put out, and so did Matt Moore of CBS, yeah. Really interesting piece on Kawhi and how the Spurs are actually better defensively when he's on the bench.
Really?
Did either of you guys like watch or read that?
No, I did not.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the players he's playing with, yada, yada. But another thing that it has to do is the Bulls figured out a strategy when you're playing the Spurs.
And what is that?
And that is Kawhi's going to be guarding your best offensive player.
Right.
And so what you do, if you're the Bulls, for example, is you put Jimmy Butler and you just put him on the weak side in the corner.
And then Kawhi has to be
over
there.
And then Kawhi's sitting over there, and then you just pound the paint against Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting it's a really interesting tactic because you're taking out your best scorer,
but you're taking out their best defender.
And you're letting your other guys go at it. And it seems like that could be a really good strategy for a lot of teams to use with Kawhi.
Yeah. And well, I'm just trying to think in general, you know, like with teams, like what teams are going to be able to do that. Obviously, the top teams in the West will be able to do that because they have other scoring options. But I don't know. I still think when you're such a good defender that you inflict that much fear and cause that much frustration with the team that they literally have to take out their best player.
Well, yeah.
That says it's a risk.
No one's doubting his ability. It's just an interesting strategy. And I think this is where they're missing a guy like Duncan, where, I mean, the fact of the matter is with Gasol and Aldridge, you just don't have that great of rim protection.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where Dwayne Dedman comes in. They've been getting a lot out of Dwayne Dedman.
Yeah.
And on like this current trajectory, depending on their matchups, you know, in the playoffs, there's a really good chance that Powell could be seeing real limited minutes because Dwayne Dedman has been that good defensively.
I've seen a lot of narratives around, you know, just kind of floating around this week on Twitter, on Reddit, on all sorts of other things that, you know, talking about the Spurs and should they sell on LaMarcus Aldridge at this point.
He's having a down year, man. I know because he's on my fantasy team.
So what do you guys think? I mean, hasn't been...
No, I don't think
he's been quite the player they signed.
No, but I mean, you look at
but
last
we knew
year
that.
Too. Well, last year, for example, like LaMarcus Aldridge after the All-Star break, that's really when he heated up, and that's also, again, speaking to my fantasy team, what I'm hoping for. but I think that who are you going to sell him for?
Well, right. That's the thing when the value is low at this point, so you don't want to not get the return back.
I'm not even sure that it's low, but you aren't. Usually, I'm in disagreement with you, Kevin, on always needing equal value. However, if you are a team like the Spurs, if you are a championship contender, you do not sell arguably your second best player for less. Like, that's just not how you do it. Now, the Sixers, for example, not to bring them up, but, you know, if they were to sell on somebody like Nerlens Noel or Ja because they're nowhere near contention and they could get a piece they needed, but it wasn't equal value, I could buy that argument. But for somebody like the Spurs, absolutely not. You are a championship team. You know, you just...
Yeah. They need help with the point guard.
They do.
But Patty Mills is, I mean, filling in fine, but I think he'll always be that second point guard. I don't think like you need someone that's going to be like Tony Parker-esque when Tony Parker's, you know, he's regressing. So like
Tony Parker's old.
Yeah. And that has a lot to do with the on-off numbers for Kawhi Leonard is the three players that, you know, he's really out there with is you have Tony Parker who's old, Pau Gasol who can't guard, and then LaMarcus Aldridge isn't exactly a rim stopper.
So who's your favorite again that you said for early DPOY?
Patrick Beverly.
Draymond Green, probably another early DPOY candidate. I know that he's not your favorite.
I think
favorite
Kevin Durant, too, right? With his defensive, I mean, his blocks.
Yeah, I don't have Durant quite as high on it. I mean, he's making an impact, but.
I don't think you can give DPOY to people that are somebody that's kicking people all the time.
That's fair.
Like, are you Defensive Player of the Year when you're kicking people in the head, in the hand?
Well, Bruce Bowen was Defensive Player of the Year, and he chopped at people's hands the entire time.
Well, fine.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Drivin' Dish NBA podcast. We really appreciate you guys. Want to once again thank Keith Smith for joining us today to talk all things Cap. If you are an Apple user, make sure you're checking us out on iTunes. If you're an Android user, make sure you check us out on Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn, the Google Play Store. Shout out to Blog Talk Radio for hosting us, and all of our episodes, as always, are at our website, drivingdishpodcast.com.
And make sure that if you want to support the show, and by that, you want to support the sponsors, you go to drivingdishpodcast.com. There is a sponsors tab at the top, and you can get that promo code for SeatGeek to save $20 off your first purchase.
And we introduced this last week. We're doing this thing on our Facebook page where we're doing nightly news recaps for you every morning on our Facebook. You can find us. Just search Drivin' Dish NBA. And, of course, you can find us all things social media by searching that as well.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Hey, let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get the point.